Microphone. I can't hear you, darling.
Yep. Okay. All right. Again, thank everyone for their sharing. It's always so interesting to hear. I'm always grateful. One of the reasons I love meeting so much is, you know, is just coming away with a little bit more awareness, a different perspective, looking at it from this way. It's always just so refreshing to me and hopeful. So chapter 10 is choosing happiness. It says, some members describe acceptance as living life on life's terms. Accepting means putting aside the wish that our situation could be different from what it is. It's a costly luxury to worry, obsess, criticize, or pine for something that we can't have. We pay for this luxury with what we could have, the peace of mind that is available to us today. To reach acceptance of our present circumstances, it is important to come to peace with our past and to heal old wounds. This work, in turn, assures us that we won't recreate our past relationships in the future. And then just the last paragraph, it is our attitudes, not our relationships, which can keep us trapped in the past. If we choose to be resentful and unhappy, it is not the fault of anyone else. As we change, the nature of our relationships will inevitably change. As we say in the suggested welcome to our meetings, so much depends upon our own attitudes. And as we learn to place our problem in its true perspective, we find it loses its power to dominate our thoughts and our lives. The family situation is bound to improve as we apply the Al-Anon, Al-Ateen ideas. And I'm just going to share briefly on this. You know, I do believe choosing happiness. Happiness is absolutely an inside job, you know, and you know, what it says here, as we learn to place our problems in their true perspective, you know, and to me, again, how I'm affected by the disease of alcoholism is it's a disease of lies. I mean, something happens and I will multiply in my head six times this terrible outcome that's going to result instead of just looking at what the problem is right now and what I can do and if I am supposed to do anything about what's going on right now. And that's what makes problems seem like we don't have choices, because I don't know about you, but I can take anything that happens and blow it up into a complete catastrophe. And, you know, and it's just awful, just what ends up happening in my head. And what I've learned in Al-Anon, if I want to be happy, is to make that commitment to be happy. And there is a page in The Courage to Change, July the 30th. It's one of my favorite pages out of that book. And again, I'm sorry to be reading this stuff, but the literature is where the message is. And it says, I've often heard that happiness is an inside job. And much of the time, I can be as happy as I decide to be. Yet I've often found happiness fleeting. I know it's unrealistic to expect to be happy all the time, but I think I might achieve this goal much more often if I made a firmer commitment to my decision to be happy. Instead, I choose happiness and then abandon my choice at the first sign of trouble. How deep can my commitment be if I allow even slight obstacles to rob me of my sense of well-being? Commitment takes work. It is a discipline. When I make a decision, I must ask myself what I really want and if I am willing to work for it. Old habits are hard to break. If I have a long-standing habit of responding to problems by feeling like a helpless victim, it may not be easy to stand by my decision to be happy. A change of attitude sometimes helps. Perhaps I can look at problems as opportunities to commit more deeply to my choices. In other words, every obstacle can prompt me to assert that I really mean it. I do want to be happy. And when I think about that, you know, the first time I read it, I thought, you know, only in an Al-Anon book do they have to put a thing about having to make a commitment to be happy and how to do it. You know, they don't have that in no AA books, you know, but only in Al-Anon, because we just don't know about the happy part. And I really do believe that, again, how I'm affected by the disease of alcoholism. And do I make a commitment to be happy? And yes, I do, as long as my life is floating along like I want it to float along. But as soon as some disaster, or not even a disaster, just something, you know, that's not in the plan happens, then it's like my happiness is dashed. And, you know, and for me, you know, my ability to be happy today is giving up the perfection, or what I perceive to be the perfection to be. You know, when people talk about, you know, that I'm honest about what's going on in my life, I have to be. That's what I learned here. If I really want to be happy, then I have to be honest about who I am and not put up this false pretense, which is what living in alcoholism always had me do. You know, my dad's okay, my husband's okay, my kids are okay, when none of that was going on, but I got to make it look that way to you so that we look like we're a happy family, even though we're a family that's suffering. And the truth of the matter is when I let you know the family that's going on, I appreciate that family so much more. It's not a perfect family, But by God, it's my family, and I love them, and they love me. And if that's not happy, then I don't know what is anymore. And that's just how it's kind of turned around for me. And now I'm going to kind of scoop on a little bit here because I don't want to go too much over time of what we have here. I know it's a long time for everybody to be together and do this. Chapter 11 is through prayer and meditation. Many of us who came to Al-Anon with hardly a spark of hope left and with little or no faith, it's not uncommon to find new members who are angry and disappointed with the God of their understanding. They are angry and disappointed about their life situation. They blame God. Step 11 states the prayer and meditation can improve our conscious contact with God as we understand him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. The message of these words is not to give up, but to let go. When we surrender our will to the care of God, we drop the limiting barriers of our own past experiences and make allowance for the future possibilities that we cannot anticipate. We let go of our limited ideas of what could be and open our hearts to opportunities that we might have not dreamt possible. The 11th step reminds us that just because we can't see how things might work out at the present moment, it doesn't mean a way won't reveal itself later. We don't have to know the answers in advance. We're not responsible for the answers. As we learn to let go, however, we can see how things can be resolved, seemingly on their own. Eventually, we learn to trust the process. Over time, we gain confidence that everything will turn out for the best. Many of us eventually find that we've developed what some people might call faith. You know, and for me, this brings me to the story of my grandson. When my grandson was going to be born, I didn't know, you know, my son was married a few years and I was waiting to become a grandma. And so the big day comes and they're going to have a baby and I'm so excited. I've never been a grandma before. I'm very jazzed about this. I make a lot of rules about what it's going to be like and what kind of a grandma I'm going to be and how this birth is going to go down. And I decide, you know, one of the first things I think about is how important it is for me to be there the day the baby's born. And of course, now I know when the baby's going to be born in May. I got a lot of commitments in May, you know, so my husband says to me, well, you might want to call those people and tell them you can't do those commitments because that's when the baby's born or due to be born, you know, and I wasn't going to cancel those commitments. Those are Al-Anon commitments. I got to keep those, you know, and then my husband says, well, you might have to face the fact that this baby's going to be born and you won't be there. And let me tell you, when the alcoholic is the voice of reason in your house, you are in bigger trouble than you even know. And so I, you know, and so what I ended up doing was, you know, I didn't talk to my sponsor about this, you know, because I had a plan and sponsors are well-known plan busters. They're just not, you know, when you make a plan and I didn't tell my home group because they'll ratchet out to your sponsor. That's no good. So, you know, and at this point I have an absolutely outstanding relationship. I, you know, for many years, I felt like I've just had this incredible relationship with the higher power. And I am a person who came into Al-Anon. No church, never taken to church, none of that stuff. It's just not part of our alcoholic growing up lives. We did not do that. There's no God. We don't talk about God. And if there is a God, then he sucks because everything sucks. And so that wasn't my deal. But over the course of time, I have come to have this absolutely phenomenal relationship with my higher power. And so I go right to God with my prayer, you know, and my prayer is, God, you know I am not supposed to ask for specific things or how things are supposed to work out. But if this baby can just not be born on the weekends when I'm out of town, this will be fabulous. And, you know, and again, I don't think I'm really reaching outside the bounds. You know, I'm not asking for personal wealth or jobs or any of that stuff. I'm just asking for a little weenie baby not to be born on the weekend, which I think is reasonable considering the level of service I provide, blah, blah, blah. And again, how I will rationalize and justify, though I will tell you I have no ego. I will tell you I do everything out of service and love. You know, when in reality, I got to know myself and I want what I want, how I want it. That has not changed at all. You know, but again, you know, but I can't base, you know, my belief in a higher power on the limited things of what I think will make me happy. But anyway, I remember praying to God. I remember seeing God's, you know, just nodding, giving me approval, you know, that that this prayer will be granted. Fast forward, I do all my commitments. I got this last commitment. I call my daughter-in-law Friday morning. She's fine. Nothing's going on. So I'm back Sunday, you know, what the heck? She's not going to have a baby. You know, it's her first baby. It takes a while, you know, and I get to this place And I get a call Friday night from my husband and the baby has been born. And I am so pissed. I can't even begin to tell you how angry I am. I am livid, you know, and I'm at this place and they're all happy to have me. And I'm just like, and I hate these people. I hate that I'm here. I hate Al-Anon. You know, when I call my sponsor and I say it sucks, you know, I ask God for one little weenie baby not to be born on the weekend. And do I get it? No. You know, it's just like, when do you get to be there for your family? You know, and again, and I want to blame and go all over this because I've made this thing in my head about how this is supposed to go down so that, you know, it's the way I want it to go down. And why? So I look good? I mean, that's really was the bottom line, but I don't know all this. And I remember screaming at my sponsor and I remember her saying, I'll have to call you back. And what I got to learn after that is that I had upset my sponsor so much. She was so unexpecting this that she had to call her sponsor because she did not know what to do with me. And so a few minutes later, my sponsor calls me back. And to me, God is always talking to me through other people. You know, I don't get the big booming voice from above, nor do I really want it, you know, but he's always talking to me through you guys. If I open up my heart and my thing and listen and I push that ego aside and what I think I want. And now what I heard was was Charlotte's voice, my sponsor's voice. And I know better than to yell at her. So I start crying, you know, now I want the sympathy. Oh, the baby's born. I didn't get to be there. It's not fair. You know, and what I remember her saying to me is, Larsine, did you turn your will and your life over to the care of God today? And I am here to tell you that every single solitary day, this day included, I turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I do that, you know, because it's the easiest thing in the world to do. It doesn't take a lot of time. It's just like you can do that in 2.3 seconds every single day without, you know, you can do it while you're brushing your teeth. It's so easy to do. And every day, God, I give you my will and my life, you know? And so I said, of course, you know, I did. And then she says, then you are exactly where you are supposed to be, doing exactly what you are supposed to be doing. And because you made some ridiculous rule in that stupid head of yours about how this was supposed to go down, you're going to take a beautiful event and turn it into a piece of crap. A beautiful thing happened today. You became a grandmother, you know, and you can either embrace that and you can accept that for what's going on, or because it didn't go the way you can make it be crap. You know, and again, one more time. And what ended up happening is Sunday I got home and I remember my husband picking me up from the airport and taking me to the hospital and holding that beautiful baby boy in my arms, you know, but left to my own devices in Al-Anon, you know, without that prayer and meditation, without God working in my life, without that stuff going on, I would have made the day that my grandson Matthew was born. That was a horrible day. That was the day I wasn't there. You know, but again, you guys show me a different way to look at it. Attitude, choices, always available to me. And now what it becomes is this really beautiful day, the day that my grandson was born, and how grateful I am for that day, and that everything went well, and that he was healthy, and she was healthy, and everybody was happy. You know, and again, I have the power over that. That's my deal. And, you know, and so through the prayer and meditation process, that's what always goes on. I'm going to tell you real quick with that kid. He's going to be 17 next month. I mean, this is how quickly time goes by for me now. At 12 years old, he's got diagnosed with Friedreich's ataxia. And that means he's practically lost his ability totally now to walk. He's in a wheelchair. And it's a generic thing. It's really, you know, there's not many. I think there's 1,000 people of all of the United States that have it. So it's what they call an orphan disease because hardly any people have it. So it doesn't get the research and all that other kind of stuff. But the bottom line is this is what my kid, my grandson has going on. And again, at, you know, 12 years ago, so then what am I in? 26 years in Al-Anon at that point, mad at God all over again, because I want what I want like I want it. And I don't want my grandson to have this disease. I don't want that stuff to be going on. And I let that affect my life. And one more time, my happiness starts to drain away from me because I think things have to look a certain way. And it was through prayer and meditation. And it was in that meditation one day when I was sitting out there in my pain, asking God why this kid had to have this thing, that I heard God's voice in my head. He said, you know what? That kid is perfect just the way he is. Just because he's not wrapped the way you want him to be doesn't make him any less perfect. And then I had that realization. If I don't want to hurt, that means I don't get to know anybody. That's the bottom line. And again, one more time. If I don't want to hurt with this, then that means I have no Matthew in my life. And the reality is today is that my grandson accepts his disability and doesn't look at it as a disability. He just looks at it as the way that he is. And one day when I was fretting over him because he was falling and all this stuff was going on, he said to me, "Grandma, I am all right. Will you please let me be all right?" You know, what can you say? So I'm going to go on to chapter 12, In the Care of a Higher Power. The stress of trying to do everything ourselves brought us to a point where our lives have become unmanageable. We can find relief in step one by accepting that we can't reorder the world to suit our wishes, no matter how sincere or well-intended they are. In step two, we can find hope in coming to understand that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three allows us to deepen our serenity as we gain confidence that a higher power is guiding our lives according to a plan, even if we don't understand it fully. In short, we find peace when we turn over anything that is troubling us. The behavior of the alcoholic, a difficult situation at work, parental disapproval, an awkward conversation we would rather not have, or another relationship issue. We give the problem to our higher power, the God of our understanding, and then use Al-Anon tools and resources to help us focus on ourselves. Letting go of a problem doesn't mean that we don't want a solution. It simply means that we won't deplete our inner resources by struggling with something that is beyond our power to accomplish. Of course, we want loving relationships in our lives. As with any aspect of our lives, we can't force a solution if the ability to change it is out of our hands. We can be comforted to realize, however, that we can find meaning in our lives by playing an active role within the scope of our higher power's plans for us. By using the tools of the program, we can bring focus to our spiritual lives. You know, and again, my story with Matthew very much pertains to this. You know, it is out of my hands to control the situation. It is not out of my hands to be a loving grandmother, to be supportive of that kid, to learn all I can about the disease of Friedreich's ataxia so that I can help where I can and accept that which I cannot change. I'm just going to share one thing about In the Care of a Higher Power. I was recently at a meeting in an area outside and just got asked to come out there and lead. And so I went there and I led it on step, you know, one, two, and three. And I heard a guy share, and he talked about In the Care of a Higher Power and how much difficulty he had turning, you know, stuff over to the care of a higher power, how he just couldn't conceptually get that into his mind. But he's a big basketball guy. And so a sponsor tells him, and this is why I love sponsors, because I think, you know, God uses sponsors. He's so smooth. He uses you. You don't even know you've been a voice for God, but that's just how God works. And so his sponsor told him, knowing what a big basketball player he is, he said, "I want you to do this instead." He goes, "You love basketball, right?" "Of course, you know I love basketball." He goes, "I want you to picture you're in a game, okay? And you guys are losing, you know, and the seconds are on the clock." He goes, "And all of a sudden, you see on the bench, Michael Jordan, okay? So he says, "Now, would you not call in Michael Jordan and pass off the ball? Because he's going to make the shot, and he's going to make it look spectacular." So that guy was able. Now his higher power is Michael Jordan. And he says, "And yeah, I tell you, I have no trouble handing over to Michael Jordan." And so when this crap really hits the fan, almost cussed right there, but I didn't. When it really hits the fan for me, I think about that guy. And I think about, you know, when I am in such desperate straits, you know what? I'm handling off to Michael Jordan. I'm just going to do that. You know, and again, it doesn't matter how you find it, where you see it, it's that it's there. And how we do that, you know, not only in this book are the Al-Anon things, but behind each chapter is story after story, personal stories about how that worked in these people's lives. And that cannot be denied. This is not a scientific book. You know, there's no real science or any of that kind of stuff behind it, but it's real world people who, when you read these things, you know they're talking to you because they've been where you've been. And what we have here, and I tell everybody all the time, is we have hope and we have it by the bucketful. And so whatever, you know, take as much hope as you need. You know, but know that you always have choices. They're available to you. And, you know, reason things out with someone else. Let there be no gossip or criticism. I am really, really big on that one. And instead, let the peace and hope of the program grow in you one day at a time. I want to thank you guys very much. I didn't think I was going to make it through this, but woohoo, here we are. And as soon as we're done, I'm going to eat like a giant piece of cake or something. But anyway, thank you for letting me do it. I love you guys.
Laura C.